and local. We are Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game, KLWB, Karen Crow, Lafayette. It's time for RP3 and Company, where Raymond Parts III and Cody Schutz talk sports with the biggest names in the state of Louisiana. LSU All-American Skylar Green.
You know, as a young athlete growing up, you always want to do the game-winning something, the game-winning shot, game-winning catch. And I thought the biggest part for me right there, that Georgia catch, that solidifying everybody seeing that LSU for real.
Ragin' Cajun hoop star Elfrid Payton.
It's exciting to be able to represent, you know, your city, and, you know, somewhere where you grew up at and put that jersey on. See that says New Orleans on the front of it. I think it means a lot.
Time to find out what's behind that door as RP3 and Company starts now.
We were able to add Tom Maystad, also from Phoenix.
You said he went after everything, right?
Sometimes he gets that. Sometimes he gets that. But
good morning. Welcome to RP3 and Company. We are broadcasting live from Hoover, Alabama, here for SEC Media Days, the unofficial kickoff of football in the South. Our continued coverage of SEC Media Days live from Radio Row and exclusive content is available on 1037thegame.com today and the next 3 days, and it's all proudly presented by the pros at Arco Equipment. I'm your host, Raymond Parsa III, producer extraordinaire. Cody Schutz is back in the 237 Roof Studios, presented by Lafayette Roofing. Cody, let's start off before we get to the sports talk, brother. Let's see how you made out over the weekend. I know severe weather due to Hurricane Barry, which became a tropical storm by the time it came through Acadiana, did do some damage, some flooding, and some wind damage throughout the area. Just wanted to make sure. How did you make out, my friend?
We came through pretty good. The only thing that of note that happened was a little piece of wood structure, if you will. It's not really a building, but it was in the chicken coop. A little wood structure got blown over in my backyard. But other than that, that'll take, you know, 10 minutes for me to pick up. Man, everybody else, hopefully you came out as good as I did. Just a few sticks and branches and whatnot in the yard, but that's no big deal, no problem.
Same for me where I live there in Sunset, Cody. Had a couple branches fall on the back end of the property, and I lost a couple of shingles. But no severe flooding and no real severe damage. Well, we didn't even lose power, thankfully. So,
hey, me neither. That makes two of us. I didn't lose power for a second during this storm. I can say that out loud now. I was nervous to say that out loud up until right now.
But I know others were not as fortunate throughout Acadiana and throughout the state of Louisiana. I know there's some bands of the storm is still making their way through back home there in Louisiana. So please, everyone, be careful back home. And, of course, 103.7 The Game will keep you up to date with any severe weather there on 103.7thegame.com. Just a reminder, we're also simulcast on Stadium Network 32.1, as well as 133 and 1133 in high definition on LUS Fiber. And if you'd like, you can give us a call on the Arco Equipment Hotline. That's 337-706-0111. That's 337-706-0111. As we said, we are broadcasting live here from the Hyatt Regency in Hoover, Birmingham, for SEC Media Days, the unofficial kickoff of football season for the entire South. Coming up today, you know, we're going to start things off later today here. Commissioner Greg Sankey will be addressing the media to start off things. That'll be in the first interview session coming up around like 11:30, between 11:30 and 3:30. And then Missouri, which has an interesting storyline with Kelly Bryant, the Clemson transfer. He will be speaking to the media. That tells me right off the bat that young man has already taken on a leadership role with the Tigers, and they're going to be looking to him to lead this team on and off the field. That's why he's here. So that'll be an interesting storyline. And then after lunch, the two main teams today, Florida, LSU, what a great pair that's going to be. Of course, we'll keep you up to date with everything that goes on with LSU throughout the day on 1037thegame.com. We have a special hub page set up for all of our SEC Media Days coverage. stories, blog posts, and, of course, video recaps that can all be found on 1037thegame.com. And I'll be providing updates on the Jordy Holberg Show as well as Bumper to Bumper Sports with Ben Love. But before we get things started today, I want to talk here at SEC Media Days, I want to talk about NBA Summer League. The Pels' run comes to an end in Vegas with an 88-86 loss in overtime to the Memphis Grizzlies. That was the semifinals for the Summer League. They play four games. Every team that takes part plays four games, and then the top seeds advance on into a playoff format. The Pels' run comes to an end against the Memphis Grizzlies there in overtime. And if you look at it, a lot of the young men, even though the Pels' run has come to an end, you have to be ecstatic. You have to be extremely positive in what you've seen from this team, this young team, throughout the summer. Look, I understand we only got 9 minutes of Zion Williamson. We wanted to see more. We are only going to see probably a game anyway. But the fact that these other players have stepped up, we saw a lot of Jackson Hayes, the young man out of Texas, the traditional center, 6'11". The big fellas put on a show, spectacular dunk after spectacular dunk, even shot a couple of three-pointers. Last night in his final summer league game, the rookie, the top 10 draft pick for the Pels, played 28 minutes. Was 4 or 5 from the field, 6 rebounds, 9 points. Good, solid night for him. The young man out of Virginia Tech, Alexander Walker, he played a full 30 minutes. He struggled. His summer league has definitely been up and down. He's shown great flashes and great potential of someone that can play at the next level, that can belongs in the association. He played 30 minutes, but he was 5 of 23. He had an off game, no doubt about it. Still got 7 rebounds, 5 assists, but he had 3 turnovers, including a costly one there in overtime. Scored 14 points, tied for a team high. So the Baby Pels, as you can, I guess, refer to them as, we saw a lot from them. You know, yes, only 9 minutes from Zion Williamson. But Hayes showed us that maybe his learning curve is not as steep and dramatic as we might have been believed to be. Only got the 1 year there at Texas, comes out, becomes a top 10 pick. The Pels trade for him when they trade the number 4 pick that they got in the Anthony Davis trade. They ship that off to the Atlanta Hawks. They get a haul in return, and one of the first picks that they get in return is the number 9 pick. And they take it on the big fella, and that surprised people. People were like, whoa, what the hell are the Pels doing? They just took Zion Williamson. Yeah, he's a 4. Why do they need a traditional 5? You've seen what Jackson Hayes has done over the course of these 6 games, these handful of games in Vegas. He is a freakish athlete. He plays way above the rim. And he's got to polish up his game, obviously, without question. But he may not be on the bench as much as we thought he would be. We thought when he was drafted there in Brooklyn on draft night, we were like, okay, well, this is a guy that's going to need a little nurturing. This is a guy that's going to need to be mentored. He's going to have to be developed. And that's still the case. That said, boy, sure does look like he doesn't need as much mentoring and developing as we thought. Now, we know Derek Favors, who the Pels traded for, from the Utah Jazz, is going to come in. He's going to be your starter. He's going to be your starting number 5, for sure, without a doubt. Okay, he's the veteran. He has playoff experience, and he's going to be able to mentor someone like Jackson Hayes. And Hayes still needs to put on probably a little mass, okay, probably 5, 7, 8 pounds, maybe some muscle. But what you've seen from him has been phenomenal in NBA Summer League play. Now, once again, disclaimer, it's the NBA Summer League, right? So it's the summer league. He's playing, but he is playing against guys who have been drafted. He's playing against guys who are going to be on NBA rosters. But I loved what I saw from Hayes. Alexander Walker, he had an up and down up and down summer league. He had games where he was phenomenal, and you're like, wow. Now, remember, both Hayes and Walker couldn't start the early games of the NBA summer league season because they had not been officially have signed their contracts because of the NBA's rule that summer league begins before the contracts can be signed due to trades. And we've established on this show and on the station that how just ridiculous that really is. So they only had a hand, they had less games. They didn't play the full summer league slate, right? But in a brief sample size, you got to like what you've seen. Now, for Alexander Walker, he's not going to be asked to do a lot because, once again, your guards are going to be, the starters are going to be Lonzo Ball, and it's going to be, then Drew Holiday is going to be at the two. Okay. So you're going to have that combination. He's going to fight with the likes of Josh Hart to be the number two. He's going to be a second team guy, okay, to start off his career here with the Pels. Frank Jackson's probably going to be the backup to Lonzo Ball, the former Duke star who lost his entire rookie season due to injury and then played well in stretches last year while still bouncing back from injury. So you got to like what you have to see there. I like what I saw from Alexander Walker. I liked what I saw from Jackson Hayes. Luzada, the young man that they took out of Brazil, finally got some reps in summer league play. He played last night, 26 minutes. He was the second-round draft pick for the Pels. 26 minutes, 6 of 12 shooting, 2 of 7 from 3, scored 14 points, tied for the team high, 6 rebounds. That was a good start. That was a good glimpse. I still think he's going to be developed. I still think they're going to stash him away in the G League or let him play in his native Brazil and let him continue to develop. I will be interesting to see what the Pels do moving forward with the former LSU star, though, Cavell Bigby Williams. He got more playing time again last night. Only played 6 minutes. His minutes have been reduced as we've gone along summer league. Remember, he started off summer league for the Pels recording back-to-back double-doubles. Okay, and that was even with Zion Williamson. Remember the whole thing on that Friday night a week ago, this past Friday, was, well, Cavell Bigby Williams, we didn't even realize he was with the Pels. We didn't even realize that he's here. And he posted back-to-back double-doubles. Now, they've reduced his minutes as the summer league has progressed. But if you're the coaching staff of the Pels, the summer league coaching staff, you're trying to get all these guys reps in summer league because it is game action and it is a good opportunity to do some evaluation. So maybe they like what they've already seen with Cavell, but Cavell did get some more playing time last night. Only got 6 minutes, 0 for 2 from the field. Did have 4 rebounds, no points. He's a glue guy. I'll be interesting to see if the Pels do have him moving forward, even if they sign him to a two-way contract and have him on their G League team. I think Cavell has proven his worth as a member of this team. I think he is a glue guy, and that's definitely someone that the front office is probably going to want to have. Now, it may not be on the big boy roster, right? It may not be on the main ticket, but I think Cavell Bigby Williams has played his way into possibly receiving a contract and earning a spot here with the New Orleans Pelicans. The Pelicans' run in the NBA Summer League has come to an end, but for a former LSU star, it hasn't. We'll talk about Naz Reid, once again, just having himself a hell of a few weeks in Vegas. We'll talk about that when we come back here on RP3 and Company, live from SEC Media Days, right here on 103.7 The Game. Welcome back to RP3 and Company, broadcasting live here from SEC Media Days on Radio Row. You can give us a call if you'd like on the Arco Equipment Hotline, 337-706-0111. We're also simulcast on Stadium Network 32.1 and 133 and 1133 in high definition on LUS Fiber. We let off today's show talking about the New Orleans Pelicans' run in the NBA Summer League has come to an end in the semifinals with a loss last night. But for a former LSU star, Naz Reid, he gets to play for a summer league championship. That's because the big fella, the former Tiger, who went undrafted for some reason, helped lead the Minnesota Timberwolves, who have yet to lose a game in summer league, to an 85-77 win over the Brooklyn Nets. Naz Reid led the team in scoring. He only played 19 minutes, but he was 6 of 12 from the field, 6 of 6 at the free throw line, scored a team-high 20 points, also had a team-high 6 rebounds, and a team-high 3 blocked shots. That's his best game so far out in Vegas for the New Jersey native and at one time projected lottery pick. And once again, we asked it on the show last week, and this guy is just having a phenomenal summer league. He was signed to a two-way contract. He goes undrafted. We thought for sure, look, once again, when he came out of high school and signed with LSU, people were talking about him being a possible lottery pick. That talk remained early in his career at LSU, despite some early season inconsistencies, some struggles. As the season progressed, he got better. He became a more complete player. Playing alongside Cavell Bigby-Williams helped him. He stepped up big, especially down the stretch. He became a better player as the season progressed for LSU. Got a huge wingspan. Powerful dunker. His three-point shot is, you know, flat-footed, admittedly. But he became better. And this is a guy that helped lead the Tigers to the Sweet 16. Draft day comes. He goes undrafted. Surprised. Just not by people who covered LSU, like myself and others, but by a lot of people. They're like, well, what the hell happened? Why did Naz Reid go undrafted? He goes undrafted. He gets signed by the T-Wolves. And he's done nothing but show out since being in Vegas. That's all he's done, is went out there and played like an absolute man. He has started every single game for the T-Wolves, with the exception of the first two games where he saw about 14 and 11 minutes, a total of 25 minutes combined. He has seen his minutes go up, his production go up. 21 minutes, 12 points, 4 rebounds, 3 assists. Then 26 minutes, 15 points, 10 rebounds, a double-double. 12 points, 5 of 8 shooting. And he's doing it across the board. Not only is he doing great at shooting the ball with a high field goal percentage, he's also rebounding. He's also dishing the ball. And then last night, he showed his potential as a defensive player when he records 3 blocks. Leads the team with 20 points. Actually led both teams, led the game, game high 20 points. Game high in points. And team high in rebounds. And block shots. The T-Wolves got themselves an absolute steal. How this guy was not drafted is going to be a big head-scratcher moving forward. I've said it before. I thought maybe he'll start the upcoming season, possibly in the G League. And he may still do that. But if I was a betting man right now, I'd be willing to bet you that the percentage of time that he spends this next coming season in the G League compared to the full season for the NBA, on the main roster, so to speak, for the T-Wolves, is now swung the other way. That he's going to spend maybe more time on the main roster than he is on the G League team, because he has just played lights out. Rebounding, blocking shots, scoring, high percentage, and he's making his free throws. Cody Schutz back in the 237 Roof Studios, presented by Lafayette Roofing. You've been monitoring along, keeping an eye on what your former Tigers are doing, my friend. How impressed have you been from what you've seen from the big fella, Naz Reid, who went undrafted?
I think after watching him play in the summer league and just early returns, and again, like you said, it is the summer league, but this is against guys that were drafted at the same time as Naz Reid would have been, or they're still very young in the NBA. My thought process is this. If Naz Reid has the talent to be an, let's just say a great player, let's not even say an elite talent, but a great player in the NBA, if Naz Reid has that capability, and he was for whatever reason not tapping into it or just not, you know, finding it in himself to be able to play at that ability, something like being snubbed on draft night could go a long way to lighting that fire, sparking the ignition, if you will, of Naz Reid to have that permanent chip on his shoulder to, you know, play with this perpetual I have to prove myself mentality. So this could end up being a huge blessing in disguise. The fact that Naz Reid went undrafted, it immediately puts a chip on his shoulder. And if he can continue playing like what we've seen in these early returns, then I think somebody's got a lengthy career ahead of them.
Excellent point there about the chip on the shoulder. It does look like he's taken the snub of not being drafted, and he's taking that negative and turning it into a positive. Because you look at his play, he could pout, right? I mean, he's still, what, only 19 years old, Cody? 19, maybe 20 years old. So he could easily pout and, you know, be like, oh, man, I didn't get drafted. I can't believe this. But he has taken what occurred by not being drafted, and he's flipped that into a positive. He's flipped that into, hey, I'm going to use this as fuel to be better. I'm going to use this to show everyone that, you know what, you should have drafted me. You didn't, and that's your mistake, and I'm going to make you pay for it. And he has helped lead the T-Wolves to the Summer League Championship game, which will be tonight. You can check in on how Naz Reid and any of the players, former LSU players, Cajun players, and local products have fared in the Summer League by going to 1037thegame.com. We got to hit a break, but when we come back here on RP3 and Company live from SEC Media Days, we'll talk a little bit about that Wimbledon final yesterday, which was epic. You're listening to Acadiana Sports Station 1037 The Game. Welcome back to RP3 and Company, broadcasting live from SEC Media Days here in Hoover. I'm your host, Raymond Parks III. Cody Schutz is the producer extraordinaire back in the 237 Roof Studios presented by Lafayette Roofing. Epic is the best way to describe what occurred at the All England Club on Sunday morning, our time, when the Joker, Djokovic, outlasted Roger Federer in the longest match in Wimbledon history. The previous longest match was between Roger Federer and Rafael Nadal back in 2008. That went an epic five sets as well, with Nadal besting Federer to win the title there on the grass courts in London. The Joker won the fifth set tiebreaker, the first fifth set tiebreaker in Wimbledon's men's history, to repeat as the Wimbledon champion and win his fifth title there at the All England Club. The fifth set tiebreaker was also the first in any men's final at the four Grand Slams. That's your Australian Open, your French Open, Wimbledon, and the U.S. Open. Joker was your defending champion. He defeated Federer 7-6. 1-6, 7-6, 4-6, 13-12. He remains unbeaten against the Swiss legend in three Wimbledon final matchups. Joker also won in 2014 and 15, and he won his first Wimbledon title back in 2011. The match lasted 4 hours and 57 minutes. It was the longest final in Wimbledon history, featuring 68 games, 422 points, and 35 aces. Joker said afterwards, quote, "Unfortunately, in these kinds of matches, one of the players has to lose." It's Joker's 16th Grand Slam. 16. And you think about it, the era of men's tennis that is continuing right now. We thought eventually it would start to die down with these three guys. They're all in their 30s now. It just isn't. Federer is still playing at an immensely high level. That match yesterday could have went his way easily. He leads. He has the most Grand Slam titles of any men's player in history. Nadal is a handful behind him, and Djokovic is a few behind Nadal. And all three of these guys are playing at the same time, in the same era. Phenomenal that this is happening. And Djokovic's the youngest of the three, and he's 32. It used to be when you got to your early 30s to mid-30s, you fall off. You may still have the mental mindset. You may still have that competitive spirit, but the body starts to wear down. And these three guys do not appear to be slowing down. People tried to write off Roger Federer about 5 to 6 years ago, and he's won major since. Just absolutely a phenomenal. Federer is 37 now. He's 37 and 340 days old. He was seeking to become the oldest men's Grand Slam winner in the open air since 1968. Don't be surprised if you see Djokovic and Federer and Nadal in the mix. Once again, the big three at the U.S. Open in Flushing, Queens. It's Djokovic's 16th Grand Slam title overall, moving him to within four of Federer's record of 20. Nadal is second on that list with 18 Grand Slam victories. I mean, Federer has 20, Nadal has 18, Djokovic has 16, and they've all played during the same era. With the exception of Andy Murray jumping in there and winning a few here and there, the sport has been absolutely dominated by three of the best players to ever play. You could argue that this era of men's tennis has surpassed the era with Connors and Agassi and McEnroe just by the sheer dominance and extended lengths of these gentlemen's career. Once again, Federer was in the longest match in Wimbledon history yesterday, and he's 37. He's a conditioned monster. Wimbledon did not traditionally play tiebreakers in the final set of matches, but introduced one for this year if the score reaches 12-12. And sure enough, the very first year that they decide that they're going to do a fifth set tiebreaker, and they put the requirements in being 12-12, that's exactly what happens. Epic match. Be interesting to see if Federer will have an opportunity to win again. Because here's the thing. He stands at 20, and his biggest adversary was Nadal. And Nadal would dominate him on the clay courts in France at Roland Garros. But then Nadal took that over and started winning Wimbledon and the other tournaments. So Nadal prevented Federer from winning even more. I mean, I don't think it's that much of an exaggeration to go, well, Federer has 20. If Djokovic and Nadal are not around, who have 16 and 18, could Fed be at 30 right now at the age of 37? I think so. Because the Djokovic and Nadal have stood in his way of winning more and more. And look, Federer had that semifinal performance where he took out Nadal in four sets. He dropped the second set, 6-1, and then took sets 3 and 4, 6-3, 6-4, to advance to the finals. He's still in exceptional shape at the age of 37. He's soon to be 38. And when you look at Federer, he has won the Australian Open 6 times, including last year in 2018. He won the one French Open title in 2009. He won Wimbledon back in 2017. but he hasn't won at the U.S. Open in quite a while. He won in 04, 5, 6, 7, 8. He had that great run, but since then, with Joker and Nadal, he's fallen short at the U.S. Open. So we'll see if he can win his 21st major in Flushing, Queens at the U.S. Open. Still can't count out Federer, even though he's going to be turning 38, but it's going to be tough. And boy, how great would it be to have another epic finals with either Joker and Nadal, or Joker and Federer, or Nadal and Federer at the U.S. Open. That would be phenomenal for the sport. But there are big questions, though. I mean, what are they going? Where are the young stars of men's tennis? Where are they at? Because they're being dominated by guys in their 30s. So who are the younger maestros that are going to be coming up and taking over? You have a youth movement on the women's side. Sloane Stephensons and others, these young, dynamic women's players that are coming up. But you're not really seeing this on the men's side. You're just not. So I'll be interested to see what happens moving forward. What happens moving forward on the men's side. On the women's side, you have someone like Sloane Stephens. You also have someone, Coco Gauffé, who's 15 years old, has ties to the New Orleans area. Okay, she had a terrific run at Wimbledon. I want to say she reached advanced to the quarters. Okay, so you have some young talent on the women's side. The men? Not so much. There's not a youth movement there. So who's going to be stepping up? Be interesting to see. As for the U.S. Open, which will be coming up, since Federer won those five in a row, it's been kind of a hodgepodge of who's won the U.S. Open. You had Juan Martin Del Potro win. Nadal's won. Joker's won. Andy Murray's won. Nadal, Joker again. Nadal and Joker have won the last two. So be interesting to see who comes out on top once again. Can Joker repeat as the U.S. Open champion as well? Will he have anything left? I mean, that was an exhausting match just to watch. Exhausting in a good way. But congratulations to Joker for repeating as Wimbledon champion. It was a phenomenal, epic, historic day at the All England Club. When we come back here on RP3 and Company, we'll wrap up hour number one with our continued coverage here from SEC Media Days. You're listening to Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game. Welcome back to RP3 and Company. We're broadcasting live from the SEC Media Days here in Hoover. We're on Radio Row. Not only are we going to be from Radio Row today and the next 3 days here from the Media Day event, we'll also have exclusive content, both video and stories, available on 103.7thegame.com, and it's all proudly presented by the pros at Arco Equipment. Coming up today on day one of the Media Days, Commissioner Greg Sankey will address everyone in attendance. And then the first team that will be taking the stage is Missouri. They're intriguing to me for a number of reasons. They had a down year, but Kelly Bryant, the former starter at Clemson, is now there. He entered the transfer portal, was allowed to go to Clemson. He's going to be, looks like, the projected starter. He looks like he's already won over the locker room. You don't bring a guy to a media day event like this if he's not going to be your projected starter. So be interesting to see what Kelly has to say and what his coach, Barry Odom, has to say. They're the first team up today. That's in the morning session, but the afternoon session is going to feature two teams that don't very much care for one another, and that, of course, are the Florida Gators and the LSU Tigers. Yeah, Florida, Dan Mullen, he's brought on Felipe Franks, LaMichael Perrin, and Jabari Zuniga. LSU, of course, Ed O will be here, Coach O. He's bringing along Joe Burrow, Lloyd Cushenberry, and Grant Delpit. So that'll be your first day, Commissioner Greg Sankey. And then Missouri, Florida, and LSU will be day number one here at SEC Media Days. And we will keep you abreast of everything going on, obviously, here, but in particular with LSU coming up throughout the day. So make sure to check back in at 1037thegame.com. You'll click on the special ARCO Equipment SEC Media Days link as part of our homepage. All of our stories and video recaps will be on there for you to be able to check out. But I want to wrap up hour number one talking about something that NFL owners are trying to push through here. CBS Sports has reported that the owners have reportedly proposed an 18-game schedule with a 16-game limit for all players. This is a terrible idea. Just awful. Just an awful idea. So it's the worst-kept secret is that a significant portion of the ownership in the National Football League is in favor of expanding the regular season from 16 to 18 games. It's a pure revenue decision. More games means you can sell more tickets. More games also means that you can renegotiate your TV contracts and get more television revenue. And that's what it all boils down to here. But they want to expand for that. And it's a terrible idea. If you're going to expand to 18 games, then you have to remove a few of those preseason games out of there, first of all. And then if you're going to do that, then you're going to also have to renegotiate the collective bargaining agreement. Because if you think that the players' union is just going to sit there and go, oh, that's fine, sure. Yeah, let's expand the regular season, and we won't take any more money, or we won't even take any more anything else for our benefits. They're wildly mistaken, and that could obviously lead to a work stoppage. On Thursday, the Wall Street Journal's Andrew Beeden published an in-depth story on the issue, which could play a significant role as the CBA talks intensify later this month. In his story, Beeden actually provided one specific proposal that the NFL owners have already pitched to the players. They propose having that 18-game schedule with a 16-game limit for all players. Meaning that backup quarterbacks would be forced to play in at least two games. So, how does that work? It's flawed from Jump Street. So you're going to have an 18-game regular season. And then there's going to be a limit of 16 games that players can play. Okay, so are we going to expand the roster here? Are you going to expand the amount of players on the roster? Not only that, if I'm a season ticket holder or just a fan of a team, I'm not a fan of this. On the surface, you're like, well, there's more games for you to attend. Great. But what if you buy your tickets and that just so happens to be the game that the team or the players decide this is the game that I'm not going to play? This is the environment, you know, this game I'm not going to play. Now, we already have that kind of in effect as it is, especially if a team is in the playoff mix, right? If they're in the playoff mix, the last game of the regular season in a lot of ways is a game that guys sit out. We'll look at the New Orleans Saints. Last year, Drew Brees and a number of other starters did not play in the regular season finale versus the Carolina Panthers. Teddy Bridgewater got the start, remember? There in the Mercedes-Benz Superdome. Now, the Houdat fans are happy to see their team play regardless. But even then, fans get disgruntled because they pay so much money before the start of the season to buy their tickets to come to a game, whether you're a season ticket holder or if you're just you buy them on a secondary market. And then you go and you pay all that money and you pay all that money not only for your tickets, but you pay all that money at the concessions, getting your beers, getting your soft drinks, getting your pretzel, getting your hot dogs, whatever you might want to get in the Superdome. I think they sell jambalaya. And then you see backups. So now the owners are proposing, we want to expand the season to 18 games and then have be a 16-game limit for players to play. It just sounds like such a bad idea. Bad idea. And you're going to have to expand the overall roster. You're going to have to let the franchises have more guys on the roster, because if you have a 16-game cap, there's going to be no way around it. And then you're going to have to figure out who you're going to get. Just logistically, it's just not going to happen. I'd be stunned if they signed off on this. The Players Association is going to fight this tooth and nail, and rightfully so. It's a money grab by the owners once again. And if they really want to push this and they really want to try to get this done, this could lead to a possible work stoppage for the NFL. So we'll keep an eye on that. That's going to do it for hour number one here of RP3 and Company, broadcasting live from SEC Media Days. We'll talk a little Houston Astros baseball coming up next in hour number two, right here on Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game.
It's time for RP3 and Company, where Raymond Parch III and Cody Schutz talk sports with the biggest names in the state of Louisiana. Two-time Super Bowl winning quarterback Eli Manning.
You know, it's my job to do my job as best I can, but to be a good teammate. You know, I've always been great in the quarterback room, helping everybody out.
Former LSU and Saints star wide receiver Devery Henderson.
To get that opportunity, man, and get that call on draft day, seeing that 504 number, it was something else, man. When I got that call, man, it was real humbling, and being able to play for Maine State and be still close to home.
Time to find out what's behind that door as RP3 and Company starts now.
And he rips this one to left center field. This one's got a shot. This one is gone. Yuli Gurriel with a two-run homer, and it's 12-2.
2-2. Breaking ball over for strike three, and that is the ball game. The Houston Astros pour it on with a seven-run seventh as they defeat the Texas Rangers 12-4. Astros earn a split of the four-game series after dropping the first two.
Good morning and welcome to hour number two of RP3 and Company, broadcasting live from SEC Media Days Radio Row. Our broadcast and the exclusive content available on 1037thegame.com is proudly presented by the pros at Arco Equipment. Cody Schutz is back in the 237 Roof Studios, presented by Lafayette Roofing, and you're listening to Acadiana Sports Station, 1037 The Game. We spent a majority of hour number one talking a little bit about NBA Summer League. The Pels run in the Summer League there in Vegas has come to an end. They lost in the semifinals last night, but still saw plenty of progress, some good play from the young Pels players, Jackson Hayes in particular, as well as Cavell Bigby-Williams still getting some reps as well, the former LSU star. Let's talk about how the former LSU star, Naz Reid, is still rolling right along. He has led the Minnesota Timberwolves into the championship game there for the NBA Summer League. The former Tiger had a game-high 20 points last night in that victory. They'll be playing for the Summer League Championship tonight out in Vegas. And we also discussed and talked about the fact that the NFL owners reportedly are trying to force an 18-game regular season with the caveat of 16-game max cap for players. So you can only play the most 16 games. And how that's kind of, let's just be honest, ridiculous. But I want to talk a little Houston Astros baseball right now, because their four-game series coming out of the All-Star break against the Texas Rangers began poorly. Back-to-back losses. it looked to be in danger of losing the series or even being swept. But they were able to turn things around. They won on Saturday to avoid being swept. And then yesterday, they won in sound fashion, 12-4, as their bats exploded. 12 runs on 12 hits. You heard it in the clip. They scored 7 runs in the top of the 7th as they just teed off on pitching. Altuve, 3-5 with 4 RBIs. Alex Bregman, he was 2-3. He drew 2 walks. He had an RBI as well. Brantley got himself 2 hits. Yoel Grell, 3-5 with 3 ribbies. Josh Reddick had 2 hits as well. And they just mowed down the Rangers to get a split of the series, 4-game series. Remember, the Astros and the Rangers, they were the only game on the Thursday slate because they were playing the 4-game set. So they come out of the All-Star break splitting with their rivals. Verlander started the game 6 innings, only gave up 2 runs on 4 hits while striking out 7. He continues his torrid pace of putting together a tremendous season, Cy Young caliber season so far for the former American League MVP and Cy Young Award winner. Davinsky came in, he struggled, only pitched 2/3 of an inning, giving up 2 runs while walking 4. But Joe Smith was able to come in, stop the bleeding, get him out of the inning. Rondon pitched a clean inning as well, and then Colin McHugh also pitched another clean inning. So the back end of the bullpen was able to kind of overcome Chris Davinsky's woes, so to speak, there. Astros are now 59-35 overall. They're a full 9 games up in the win column on the Rangers. Altuve, look, he started off the year struggling. He had a brief time there where he was putting up good power numbers, getting home runs left and right, but he still wasn't hitting for average. Jose wasn't, the former league MVP, World Series hero. Then he went on to the IL. Had an extended stay on there. As the Astros have dealt with that, Springer was on there as well. Carrera is still on there, Carlos. But, man, he had himself. That grand slam was just phenomenal yesterday for Jose. He really has seemed, since he's gotten off the IL, that he's kind of returning to form, so to speak. You love seeing the power from him. Of course, Gurriel had one as well. He had a 2-run homer. So you love the power that you're seeing coming from the Stros. You also had to see what you saw from Verlander. You know, Verlander, as great as he's been this year, and he is a legitimate Cy Young candidate, the fact of the matter is he's also given up a ton of home runs. He's been very vocal about that, proclaiming that he believes that there's something different that's occurred with the balls, that they're possibly being juiced by Major League Baseball, who owns Rawlings, who bought Rawlings, and that's the preferred baseball for Major League Baseball. He was able to keep the Rangers in check and didn't even allow a single extra base hit. Did not allow a single extra base hit to the Rangers yesterday. They did not touch Verlander through his entire 6-inning stint after getting the 2 runs in the very first inning off of 4 singles. Verlander was clean the rest of the way, until they were able to get to Davinsky later on, who walked 4. Colin McHugh closed out the game for the Stros. The question that I have coming out of the weekend 4-game set with the Rangers, if I'm an Astros fan, is Altuve back? is Jose back? Because when he got injured back in May, he was hitting a pedestrian 243. This is a guy who's well above 300 career hitter. This is a guy who's been in contention of winning batting titles. He was a league MVP. So even though he did display some power early in the season, he was struggling before he went on the IL. Since June 20th, this is what Altuve's been doing, hitting 321. And since June 30th, his line is an MVP-like 357 batting average, an OPS of 896. He went 3-for-5 on Sunday, went 4-for-6 on Saturday. He does now appear to finally be returning to his 2017 MVP form, where he's hitting for power and he's hitting for average. He just seems healthy. In the last three games, Altuve is 8-for-16 with two home runs, including the Grand Slam on Sunday and two doubles. And that also includes the game-winning hit in the 11th inning on Saturday. And he's not the only one that's been dominating. We've talked about it on the show before. Gurriel, when he gets an RBI, I think the stat line last week was that they were 32 of 34 when Gurriel gets an RBI. He was 3-for-5 on Sunday. And since June 23rd, Gurriel is hitting 368. His OPS is 1.366. And he's had 11 home runs. Just, that is phenomenal. That's dominant play. And they still don't have Carlos Carrera back. Think about it like that. This is a 50-plus win team, and they still are missing an all-star infielder and one of their best hitters. Just so good. This Astros ball club is just so good. It's hard to see this team. It's hard to see this team slowing down anytime soon because they're getting healthy at the right time. You got Altuve, you got Bregman, you got Springer, you got Brantley, who was the steal of free agency. Up and down, this team is phenomenal. Now, what are they missing? Their bullpen has been shaky at times this season. I think we can all admit to that. They've been immensely shaky at times. And once you get past Verlander and Gerrit Cole, yeah, and you got Wade Miley as your number three, you're good to go. But they don't have a fourth guy right now, and they don't have a number five. So do they make a move? Do they try to make a move to get another pitcher? I think they need to, but we'll see. Astros will be back on the airwaves tonight right here on 103.7 The Game, as we're your home for the Houston Astros in Acadiana. Astros at Angels. Pregame will be at 8:35. First pitch 9:07, so we've got some late-night baseball for you as the Astros are on a West Coast swing. So Astros at Angels. Pregame 8:35 tonight, first pitch at 9:07. When we come back, we'll keep the Houston Astros talk moving right along. We'll talk about Brad Peacock, possible trouble with him in his recovery. We'll talk about it right here on Acadiana Sports Station 103.7 The Game, broadcasting live from SEC Media Days. Welcome back to RP3 and Company right here on 103.7 The Game, Acadiana Sports Station. We're broadcasting live from Radio Row at SEC Media Days here in Hoover. We'll be here all 4 days at the Hyatt Regency Hotel, home of the unofficial kickoff of football in the South, SEC Media Days. In the last segment, we were discussing Houston Astros. They were able to get a split from the Texas Rangers, their first series out of the All-Star break. taking 2 of 4, doing so in convincing fashion, including Jose Altuve getting a huge grand slam in yesterday's rout of the Tejas Rangers. But not all news was good coming out of Houston. The Houston Chronicle, Hunter Atkins, is reporting that there's been a setback to Astros starter Brad Peacock. The reporting is that he has suffered a setback. A.J. Hinch said Sunday, quote, "I don't know what we're going to do," end quote. After expecting to be activated from the injured list for a start on Monday, he was expected to start tonight's game at the Los Angeles Angels. Peacock suffered, quote, "unexpected soreness," end quote, Hinch said, in his bothersome right shoulder 2 days after he threw a bullpen session. That is not a good sign. If he's getting the soreness 2 days after throwing a bullpen session. So definitely cause for concern there for the Stros. The Houston Chronicle is reporting that the Astros will send Peacock to Houston for medical treatment for his intermediate soreness, Hinch said. Hinch said, quote, "You don't know when the soreness is going to go away." Hinch will either give lefty Framber Valdez, who has been roughed up in his last few starts, has not looked good, or a reliever to start on Monday with the surprising news coming out Sunday's game there in the finale with the Rangers. Whether it's Valdez that starts then or possibly on Tuesday, Hinch has a little choice. The Astros had already sent down Cy Snead in anticipation of Peacock's return. So it'll be interesting to see what Hinch and general manager Jeff Luno now discuss how they're going to move forward depending on what the evaluation uncovers with Peacock. Because they were depending on him to be that number four guy. And they were already in talks of having, you know, they were already in talks of going out there and picking themselves up yet another starter, okay, before the trade deadline. Because, yes, they got Verlander. Yes, they have Cole. They got Wade Miley, who I think is their three. It may be a toss-up between Wade Miley and Peacock, but that's your 3-4. And they don't have a number five guy. They don't have a number five guy. Well, now, if Peacock is suffering arm soreness, now they only have three. So, be interesting to see what happens with them moving forward. This could be a wrinkle. This could be a challenge for them moving forward in what they're going to be doing. Because, look, you need the arms for the second half of the season. You need that to make your stretch run. You definitely need as many arms as possible in the postseason. And you don't necessarily need a full five, okay? You don't need a five-man rotation. You don't. Because a lot of times that five-man, that fifth man will be sent as a middle reliever. But it's always good to have as many arms, healthy arms as possible. And right now, the Astros have a guy who could win the Cy Young in Verlander. They have an all-star in Gerrit Cole. And Wade Miley has shown flashes this year. But now their guy who was going to be their number four is now experiencing some arm soreness and is going to have to be evaluated. This may force the Astros' hand even more so, who were already looking to add depth to their starting rotation. This may force their hand to do so, and they may have to be a little bit more aggressive in a trade coming up to the trade deadline. So definitely bad news there for the Astros. And I just, they're in a great spot because they have one of the best pitchers of this era or any era. I mean, a guy that's going to be a Hall of Famer, right?
somebody open the curtains. You can see now everything's happening.
They have Verlander. Garrett Cole, we've established, is an underrated pitcher. Even though he's a three-time All-Star, the guy's underrated. So you're great, right? If you're the Astros, you got your 1-2 punch. Get your 1-2 guys. Wade Miley has shown flashes, which is good. So you get your number three. But, man, you got to have a number four and a number five. And if you want to make a run to the World Series championship and win another trophy and have that in the case there at Minute Maid Park, you're going to have to make some type of move. Now, it doesn't have to be a big splashy move like they've done in the past. Remember, they traded for Verlander. They poached him away from the Detroit Tigers. You don't have to make that kind of move, even though I've mentioned it on the show before, possibly going after someone like Madison Bumgarner. I don't think you have to make that big of a splash, right? Even though Mad Bum is only now 30 years old, and I think he would probably thrive in Houston. You don't have to do that. But you need to bring in someone now, because we don't know. Peacock will be evaluated today, and we'll get an update probably later this evening, more than likely tomorrow. But if he is going to miss some significant time, they're definitely going to have to make a move. Even if it's a mid-level or a mid-tier type of pitcher, they're going to have to make a move here. They're just going to have to, because you can't make the stretch run. You can't go the second half of the season with only three starting pitchers. You need four. So with Peacock being injured, maybe this is a blessing in disguise. Maybe this allows them to force the front office to be aggressive and go get one of those big, powerful arms. Maybe you make a run at Bumgarner or whoever else is available out there. You know, it just... Who do you go after? You know, who do you go after here? You know, maybe you don't want to go after Bumgarner. Maybe you don't want to have to deal with his salary. I think they can make it work. Is Zach Wheeler someone that you go after for the Mets? Possibly. You know, Bumgarner is the biggest name out there. This is a guy who's a three-time World Series champion, one of the best postseason pitchers in history. That'd be a tremendous pickup at the end. But maybe it's not Bumgarner. Maybe you go after someone like Zach Greinke. We talked about it on last week's show, possibly going after someone like Trevor Bauer. Now, I know he's not a favorite of the Houston Astros fan base, but the guy is salty, and he's got good stuff. And if the end of the day is you want to win world championships, then you may take someone who may rub some of your fans the wrong way because he's played for the opposition. And you gladly bring him on, and he can be your guy that goes out there and angers the other teams instead of your own. So it'll be interesting to see what happens with the Astros. Coming up here on RP3 and Company on Acadiana Sports Station 103.7 The Game, we'll hit a break. But when we come back, we'll talk to Jarrett Rozier of TigerDetails.com. All things LSU recruiting, right here, live from Hoover for SEC Media Days. Welcome back to RP3 and Company, right here on Acadiana Sports Station 103.7 The Game. We're broadcasting live from Radio Row at SEC Media Days. Our continued coverage of SEC Media Days, live from Radio Row, and our exclusive content available on 103.7thegame.com is proudly presented by the pros at Arco Equipment. Right now, it's time for us to head out to the Arco Equipment Hotline as we welcome on our next guest. He is very well-rested now and apparently has a tremendous tan as he spent a few weeks over in Italy. He's now back in the grind of covering football recruiting for LSU. It's our good friend from TigerDetails.com, the one and only Jarrett Rozier. Jarrett, how you doing this morning, brother?
Buongiorno, Ray. I'm doing pretty well, I guess. It was weird to come back from 3 weeks in Italy into a tropical storm. We didn't know if I was going to be able to make it back as planned, as Barry kind of started making its way through the Gulf. And so it's been kind of a weird weekend back. But you know, this you are my first like return to normalcy type situation. So I'm glad we can get back into a routine on Monday morning.
Well, it is my pleasure to help you get back into the working man's routine, brother. Let's talk a little bit about, I saw a story that posted actually late last night about Ohio State trying to flip five-star LSU defensive back commitment Elias Ricks. What can you tell us about the likelihood of that happening, and how strong is his commitment to the Tigers?
So Ohio State, as well as some other notable schools, I know a lot of people will keep an eye on Alabama and some others, will certainly do what they can to continue to pursue Elias Ricks. He's that type of a prospect, incredibly highly touted national prospect, in a lot of people's minds, the top cornerback in the country. And so when you are recruiting a guy of that nature, as LSU is doing in a lot of places this year, even more so than in years past, that's going to be something that you have to continue to worry about. You can't sit back and rest, particularly with a guy who has now been committed since this past Christmas Day. So it's a long-term commitment, and they've got to stick with it with not only Elias, but a lot of the other guys. That's something that becomes that much more complicated when it is a national recruit. A guy, he's from California, and obviously in the past few weeks announced that he'll be playing his senior season in Florida at IMG Academy. And we've talked about it with some of the guys in the D.C. area as well. But I'm not overly concerned at the moment. I think that LSU has done such a good job recruiting Ricks, and the relationship there with a guy that you and I have talked about several times, Coach Corey Raymond and Elias and the family, the Ricks family, that relationship is so strong that I think they remain in great shape. They'll have to continue to recruit him and make sure he knows and the family knows how big of a priority he is for the Tigers, and just, you know, what the fit is there and the potential is for him to come be a part of DBU. But I think that's something that really resonates with Elias and the family right now. And as long as Corey and company keep doing what they've been doing, I think the Ricks family feels pretty at home in Baton Rouge. It's certainly something to continue to watch with him and a lot of these other top guys as you hear pitches from Ohio State and Alabama and so on. But I still feel pretty good about their position with that top cornerback out of California.
We're talking with Jarrett Rozier of TigerDetails.com here on the ARCO Equipment Hotline. Jarrett, there's still a lot of buzz going on about the four-star wide receiver for the 2020 class out of California. That's Jermaine Burden. A lot of buzz going on about his 7-on-7 performances. What can you tell us about his commitment to the Tigers and how solid that is?
Yeah, he's going to be another – all these guys that are from coast to coast with this newfound national recruiting approach that LSU has taken this year are going to be guys that they have to really stick with. And Jermaine Burden, the receiver from Calabasas out in California, is somebody that has particularly, I think, gained a lot of attention recently. I know he had some good performances. It's been kind of a slow few weeks recruiting-wise, like you and I were talking about over the weekend, but with a couple events that happened while I was in Italy, the five-star challenge out in Georgia, and then obviously the opening finals, Jermaine Burden, I think, really excelled in the latter and was kind of all over Twitter and had a lot of buzz around his name. And so he's going to be somebody that I think was on a lot of radar, certainly even before he committed to LSU a ways back. But as we get into, as we approach this senior season and get into the senior season, he's going to be one that has a lot of other schools that continue to pursue him. Some other SEC schools, Georgia's and whatnot, as well as really all over the country, some other schools out west, the Arizona schools. Be interesting to see how
how involved Alabama potentially tries to stay, depending on how their board shapes up. But I think his, you know, his commitment and being around some of those other LSU guys, being around Elias, being around T.J. Finley, who has, I think, had himself a nice summer. The relationships there for a lot of these guys, regardless of whether they're in Louisiana or California or the Washington, D.C. area, has been pretty strong. And so they kind of keep in touch and keep building that relationship and that rapport and are talking more about who else they can add than necessarily looking at the likelihood that any of them flip right now. But it's, you know, he's Jermaine Burton's going to be one, I think, to continue to watch just because he is a West Coast guy, and it's tough to get a lot of those guys to come to Louisiana. But right now, I think he's still a guy that LSU feels pretty good about.
We're talking with Jarrett Rozier of TigerDetails.com right here on the ARCO Equipment Hotline. Jared, a guy that's a little bit closer to our neck of the woods is Kayshawn Boutte, Westgate High, sensational wide receiver. He also has played running back in other positions. He's long been a verbal commitment for the Tigers, but his profile just gets higher and higher. What are some of the other teams that are going to be in the mix that are going to try to make a push to get Kayshawn to change his mind and not become an LSU Tiger?
Yeah, I think the biggest one of late is as much as folks in Louisiana are used to hearing it and hate seeing it and whatnot, as Alabama has been very involved with Kayshawn. He was one of the guys a few weeks ago that was out there on a visit and seemed like he really enjoyed himself. And I know the Crimson Tide is, you know, has really held him in high regard and continued to pursue him. You've seen Kayshawn on Twitter kind of reassure some folks and just seem like, like we were mentioning with kind of some of the behind-the-scenes dynamic of the relationship and support between a lot of these guys that are committed to LSU right now, you've seen that pretty vocally on Twitter from some guys like Kayshawn and TJ, where they have not shied away from talking about LSU and, you know, their admiration for the program and excitement to be a part of this class that's being built. But Alabama, I think, is kind of the big challenger looming for Kayshawn Boutte, as Alabama tends to be for a lot of top Louisiana prospects. And so in terms of some of these Louisiana guys, it's not quite the same as you know, I've been mentioning having to worry about the guys from D.C. and L.A. and all that. Kayshawn is just right down the road there in New Iberia, but he's one that Alabama will, I'm confident, continue to keep in contact with, as well as some of these other schools. Arkansas is one SEC school that I know is going to keep in contact with a lot of these Louisiana guys, but right now Alabama looks like the big challenger, and that's something that LSU will have to continue to stay kind of vigilant in their recruitment of Kayshawn, as with a lot of these other guys, because he's a guy that's, he's been a big part of this class for a while now, and they're looking for some receivers to add to this offense with Coach Ensminger and Joe Brady, and he would be a guy with all that speed and playmaking potential that could be a big part of this class for them.
We're talking with Jarrett Rozier of TigerDetails.com here on the ARCO Equipment Hotline. Jarrett, recruiting's been a little quiet of late the last couple of weeks. I'm sure you made some phone calls and let all the recruits know, hey, just take it easy. I got to go overseas for a little while. Because that's the kind of the weight that you carry in recruiting circles, brother. But I know it's been quiet, but there has been some news, right? Some dates are coming up, some commitment dates. Some guys are going to be making some announcements. What can you tell us?
Yeah, I'm glad you made that joke, because I was absolutely going to make that joke that I made sure I got in the group text and told them, you guys be chill for a few weeks. But it has been a pretty quiet few weeks in the wake of those two big national events that I mentioned that, I mean, happened like right as I was leaving. And so it's been a few weeks since very much has happened. And really, as far as LSU recruiting, Elias transferring to IMG, or his announcement that he was transferring to IMG, has been one of the bigger news points since then. But starting this week, we'll have some dates worth watching. Lathan Ransom, a safety from Arizona at Saddle Point Catholic out in the Tucson area, will be announcing a decision tomorrow. I believe he's scheduled to release a kind of a commitment video tomorrow. LSU is a school that's recruited him, that he has certainly had a lot of admiration for through the process. His teammate, the running back, Bijan Robinson, is scheduled for August 2nd. Another guy that seems to really enjoy LSU. I'm not sure that fans should necessarily expect either one of those commitments to come. It seems like Ohio State and a few other schools, Texas, and I know Notre Dame, and particularly with Lathan Ransom, have been a little bit ahead of LSU, it seems, of late with regards to those two guys. But one that LSU fans, you know, a local guy here, while I was gone, Jaquellen Roy, the big defensive tackle from U High, said that he will be announcing on July 26th, so also coming up here pretty soon. And that's one that LSU will be battling, again, Alabama, but also Texas A&M, Florida, and some other schools. But that's one that I think LSU is very, very much in the mix with. I've expected for a while that Jaquellen would end up staying home, and I think that's kind of a critical date for LSU as well, because as good as this class has been, I think Jaquellen Roy is kind of one of the biggest names out there remaining that is kind of a critical piece for this 2020 class.
We're wrapping things up with Jarrett Rozier of TigerDetails.com right here on the ARCO Equipment Hotline. Jarrett, last year LSU took full advantage of the early signing period. The majority of their class came in that early signing period at the end of the year, and they were able to add a couple more guys in the traditional spring session. Do you see that being the case again this year? I know we still have some time off, but is this how things are trending with this group for 2020, that a lot of these guys are going to want to sign on the dotted line during the early period?
Yeah, I do think that will be the case again this year, that the bulk of these 2020 commitments and ultimately signings for LSU will end up being locked in December for that early signing period. And I think really that's going to start to be more of the norm moving forward, as long as the NCAA rules for recruitment and signing and everything remain what they have become these past few years. That first year 2 years ago, I think, was a little bit of a learning experience for a lot of the coaching staffs, the college coaching staffs, as well as the high school prospects and, you know, their coaches and families and people close to them. And so what we saw this past December, I think, was kind of the new normal after everyone had that year to adjust and figure out what the best way to navigate things would be now. I think what we saw with the vast majority of that class, you know, pushing close to 20 of the guys already being, or right around 20 of the guys already being locked in by December, I think is kind of going to be the goal, the expectation, and more often than not, the likelihood for LSU and other top programs. And so it'll be interesting to see how this fall goes for LSU. They have 20 guys committed right now. I think some other guys will be committed by the time the season kicks off. And what Coach Orgeron and company are able to do this fall on Saturdays in terms of their actual competition and schedule and record and where they are in the SEC and nationally will play a big role in how things really round up by December, because I do expect that December date to be really big again, and that the early February traditional signing period will continue to just be a few big names, but not quite the spectacle that it had been for so long.
Jarrett, appreciate you, brother, and thank you for making time for us. I'm glad we could get you back into the work mindset, and you just keep being Mr. Worldwide, my friend. That's all you got to do, brother.
I think I'm staying put relatively locally here, for the rest of the year. I've got Amos Morales' wedding this weekend, and I've got a wedding in a few weeks up in Portland. But other than that, it's going to be mostly football trips the rest of 2019. So looking forward to it. Looking forward to a lot of Monday morning conversation with you guys.
My man is living his best version of his life. Jarrett, thank you again, brother. Enjoy the rest of your week. We'll talk to you next week, man.
Thanks, bro. You too.
Jarrett Rozier, TigerDetails.com, joining us, giving us all the latest updates on LSU recruiting like he always does every Monday. We got to hit a break, but you're listening to RP3 and Company right here on Acadiana Sports Station 103.7 The Game, broadcasting live from Radio Row at SEC Media Days in Hoover. Welcome back to RP3 and Company right here on Acadiana Sports Station 103.7 The Game. We are broadcasting live from SEC Media Days here in Hoover. All of our coverage here exclusive from Radio Row and the content available on 1037thegame.com over the course of the next few days is presented by the pros at Arco Equipment. When the only road is no road, it's Arco Equipment. Tropical storm Barry, which became a hurricane, then dropped back down to a tropical storm, and now is a tropical depression. People are still feeling the effects of that back home in Acadiana. This is from the National Weather Service. There is a flash flood warning in effect throughout Acadiana and throughout the state of Louisiana. Southeastern Jefferson Davis Parish is currently under a flash flood warning. Northwestern Acadia Parish, as well as West Central St. Landry Parish. Now, that's not necessarily due to a severe amount of rain that's going on right now. It's due to those areas have taken on so much rain over the course of the last 3 to 4 days that's where the flooding issues are coming in. So please be careful out there throughout Acadiana and St. Landry, Acadia Parish, and even far down as in Jeff Davis Parish. Cody Schutz, you're back there in the 237 Roof Studios presented by Lafayette Roofing. What are the conditions like right now back there? Are they improving?
Yeah, I believe it's hard for me to tell. I'll be able to go peek outside in a minute or two here, but I feel like I'm definitely hearing some rain hitting the roof. Right. And then with these flash flood warnings coming through, it's not too surprising. Just a simple thunderstorm now in the right area could cause some flooding. So I think that's what the main issue is, right?
Correct. And a lot of these areas, some of them are low-lying. They took on, you know, a significant amount of rain and over the weekend. So now any other additional moisture, it can cause some challenges and some possible damage. So please, everyone, be safe out there throughout Acadiana. That's going to do it for hour number two. Hour number three is coming up. We'll be talking with Jeff Palermo of Louisiana Radio Network after this break. You're listening to RP3 and Company right here on Acadiana Sports Station, live from SEC Media Days on Radio Row in Hoover, Alabama.
Live and local, we are Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game, KLWB, Karen Crow, Lafayette. It's time for RP3 and Company, where Raymond Parch III and Cody Schutz talk sports with the biggest names in the state of Louisiana. Raging Cajun legend Brian Mitchell.
My dream was always to play in the NFL, so having an opportunity was the main thing I needed.
LSU College World Series hero Warren Morris.
I don't get tired of talking about it. You know, if people remember me for that home run and winning that championship, I think that's great.
Time to find out what's behind that door as RP3 and Company starts now.
Welcome back to RP3 and Company right here on Acadiana Sports Station 103.7 The Game. We are broadcasting live from SEC Media Days here on Radio Row in lovely Hoover, Alabama. Reminder, all of our continued coverage of SEC Media Days live from Radio Row and the exclusive content available on 1037thegame.com all 4 days is proudly presented by the pros at Arco Equipment. Started off hour number one, we broke down NBA Summer League. The Pels run in the Summer League there in Vegas has come to an end. It ended in the semifinals. They lost last night, but still an impressive showing from the young men. Jackson Hayes, the lottery pick, top 10 pick out of University of Texas, performed very well. Alexander Walker, the guard out of Va Tech, he had an up-and-down summer league, but he performed well as well. It's just not all about Zion and his 9 minutes from a week ago last Friday. But multiple players have stepped up. You got to love what you see from the younger players that the Pills have now in their arsenal, on their roster, all those young players under the age of 24 years old. We also talked about Naz Reid having himself one hell of a summer league performance. The former LSU star who, for some reason, went undrafted, and yet, boy, he's making a lot of teams look silly right now. We're going to talk more about that, as well as LSU going to be later taking the stage here at SEC Media Days with our next guest as we head out to the Ardco Equipment Hotline. He joins us every week. He's the pro's pro. He did a tremendous job over the week in providing weather updates for the entire state. It's our good friend from the Louisiana Radio Network and co-host of Tiger Rag Radio, the one and only Jeff Palermo. Jeff, how you doing this morning, brother?
I'm doing well, Ray. How about yourself?
Doing well. I'm getting a taste of the madness that is SEC Media Days. It's starting off slow today, Jeff, but I'm pretty sure you're going to tell me that it's going to get crazier as the days go on, is it not?
It certainly will. Certainly will, especially once Auburn and Alabama roll into town.
Yes, I've been told that the scene at the escalators will be one that I will remember for the rest of my life, or possibly haunt me. I'm not for sure which one that's going to be. Jeff, I want to talk a little bit about the Pels, and I want to talk about Naz Reid, because here's someone, when he got to LSU, people talked about him being a projected lottery pick. That did not go away during the season. He actually progressed and got better after some early struggles there at LSU and became more of a complete player as the season progressed. For some reason, he goes undrafted, and he has just been absolutely tearing it up for the Minnesota Timberwolves there in the summer league. Are you surprised by his performance?
Well, I think you have to really take it – You have to take it into a grain of salt here. We are only talking about the summer league here. I mean, we're not talking about, we're not talking about obviously real games. And, when you look at the list of guys that have won the summer league MVP, it's not, I mean, there's some big names there. I know Damian Lillard won it 1 year. There's some other guys on there that really haven't made their mark in the MVP in the NBA. So, one of my big concerns with him was that I just always thought he kind of lacked the explosiveness in the NBA. And so what happens when he does go up against some veteran guys, maybe some bigger guys? How will he perform at that time? I think that still remains to be seen. But looking at what he did for LSU, I think a lot of what he did, even though the numbers don't really jump off the page as far as how many points that he averaged and so forth, but I still think he did a lot for this team, especially on the defensive end. So let's see. Let's just kind of wait and see. He's been big. He had a 20-point performance, I think, again last night. I never thought a guy like Glenn Davis was going to have a long NBA career, but he ended up having a decent career. And the reason why I felt that way is because his game was so much underneath the rim. Right. that I thought he would struggle in the NBA, but he turned out had a pretty good career in the NBA, won a championship with the Boston Celtics. So. Maybe Naz Reid could be another guy that could stick around. He does have the ability to shoot from the outside, and that's something that the NBA likes, especially out of their big people.
We're talking with Jeff Palermo of the Louisiana Radio Network here on the ARCO Equipment Hotline. Jeff, let's stay in the summer league. Tremont Waters played. He's played well. He got a ton of starts for the Celtics. But just talk a little bit about the performance that he put on over the weekend after the tragic loss that he suffered and the fact that he still went out there and played a game.
Yeah, very impressed that he still went out there and played. His future for the next year is pretty much tied up at this point, right? Because he signed a two-way contract, which means he can only play a minimum amount of games in the NBA or spend a minimum number of days with the Boston Celtics. He'll be spending a lot of his time – in the G League. But for him to still keep playing in what are really just basically exhibition days is, and that's pretty impressive for that kid. And we're talking about the sudden death of his father, not necessarily something that was expected or anything like that. So pretty impressive from Tremont Waters to keep playing. And I still like what Tremont Waters can do for an NBA team and his long-range future in the association. A guy that can shoot threes like he can from long range, a guy that can pass. Obviously, will he be able to defend, especially against bigger players? That remains the big question mark for him. But I still think he can have a decent career for his size and be a really good backup point guard on an NBA team if it doesn't work out with the Celtics somewhere else, especially someone that can provide the offense and the ability to pass the ball that he can do. That's something you kind of like that coming off your bench if you're an NBA coach.
We're talking with Jeff Palermo of the Louisiana Radio Network and co-host of Tiger Rag Radio right here on the ARCO Equipment Hotline. Jeff, does Cavill Bigby Williams have a future in the NBA, even if it's just the G League?
I think he could play in the NBA. I mean, he's a guy that, he plays so well as far as doing all the little things for you, and he's a great rim protector. He's athletic, obviously. Can get you the rebounds, block some shots for you. Could just do a lot of little things for you. Another guy that I think could find a niche if he's with the right organization, finds the right role, is a pretty good bench guy somewhere. Another guy that was really, you knew about him on this past, this SEC championship team that LSU had, but it was mainly a role guy, but played his role very well. And if he can find playing that role somewhere in the NBA, I think he can make an impact. I tell you what, he's one guy that when we do get into LSU basketball season, LSU will certainly miss him because his ability to defend around the rim, that was huge for LSU this past season, and they lack that kind of guy going into next year.
We're talking with Jeff Palermo of the Louisiana Radio Network here on the ARCO Equipment Hotline. All right, Jeff, let's talk about the LSU football team. They'll be taking the stage here in the afternoon session on the first day of SEC Media Days. Missouri will be the first team up after Commissioner Greg Sankey addresses everyone in attendance. And I find it ironic that they're going to be paired up kind of in the afternoon session with Florida, two programs that don't necessarily care for each other. But we'll start here. What do you expect will be the tone from Coach Ed Orgeron and his three players, Joe Burrow, Grant Delpit, and Lloyd Cushenberry? Will it be one of optimism? Will it be cautious? Or will it be taking the same mindset they had last year where it was all about kind of blocking out the noise?
Well, there will be the blocking out the noise part of it, but this time it's different. Last year blocking out the noise was all the discussion of maybe this might be just a 6 or 7 win team. Now looking ahead to today, the blocking out the noise is, hey, people are talking about LSU, winning 10 games again this season, and they're really good, and they can maybe even challenge Alabama, and they need to block that noise out because they still need to get better in various areas along the offensive line. Their wide receivers need to grow up. You feel good about the running backs that they'll have on the roster, but who's going to step up out of that group? They need a replacement or some sort of a guy that can replace Devin White. They're going to be missing that type of leadership all season long. So there's a lot of question marks still with this team. So they got to block out the noise. It just can't feel like if they show up that they're going to win 10 games. But I do think you're going to feel an optimism type of tone from these guys. I think Coach Ed Orgeron really likes his team, likes what they can do. He's going to be very positive about what they're able to accomplish in 2019. So I think there will be a lot of questions about the offense. You're going to hear him talk quite a bit about you know, adding Joe Brady to the staff and what they're going to get out of year number two from Joe Burrow and how much better it's going to be. So an optimistic Coach O, along with still blocking out that noise. But this time it's a lot of positive noise that will be heading towards LSU's direction.
We're wrapping things up here with Jeff Palermo of the Louisiana Radio Network, also co-host of Tiger Rag Radio. Jeff, what do you got coming up tomorrow on Tiger Rag Radio? I know it's going to be SEC Media Day heavy. I know you were unable to come live for here, but I know you guys will still be doing the show. So what you got on tap tomorrow night for Tiger Rag Radio?
Well, we'll obviously be recapping SEC Media Day so far through the 2 days. You know, tomorrow we'll have Georgia, Ole Miss, Texas A&M, and Tennessee at SEC Media Day. So I'm sure we'll talk a lot about the Rebels. We'll talk a lot about the Aggies, a couple of teams on LSU schedule, and SEC West rivals. So it will certainly be SEC Media Day centric, and may throw in a little bit of baseball news in there as well as you know, the hiring of Eddie Smith a week ago. Seems like a really good move for Coach Palmieri's staff, so we'll continue to talk a little bit about that. But mainly football talk is, you know, now that we're here, we have SEC Media Days. That means, man, we're so close. You can almost taste it as far as the start of college football season.
Well, Jeff, appreciate you making time for us. As always, tremendous job over the weekend with the weather updates as well, my friend. Appreciate you doing that for all of us here in Acadiana and through the state of Louisiana. And enjoy your week. And we'll talk to you soon, my friend.
All right, sounds good. Thank you.
That's Jeff Palermo of the Louisiana Radio Network, also co-host of Tiger Rag Radio. Just a reminder, you can listen to Tiger Rag Radio right here live on 103.7 The Game tomorrow night between 6 and 8 o'clock. You can hear Jeff and the rest of the gang talk all things SEC Media Days from the LSU perspective right here on 103.7 The Game. We got to hit a break, but more RP3 and Company right here on Acadiana Sports Station 103.7 The Game, broadcasting live from SEC Media Days in Hoover. Welcome back to RP3 and Company right here on Acadiana Sports Station 103.7 The Game. We're broadcasting live from SEC Media Days here on Radio Row. Cody Schutz is manning the ones and twos tremendously, as always, back in the 237 Roof Studios, presented by Lafayette Roofing. You can also catch us on the simulcast on Stadium Network 32.1, as well as 133 and 1133 in high definition on LUS Fiber. I want to touch on a little something before we bring on our next guest, which will be David N. Grubb from CrescentCitySports.com, helping us wrap up New Orleans Pelicans Summer League discussion. That'll be coming up here at 8:32. I want to talk about a former Pel, Anthony Davis. There's been some news about him over the weekend. First, it came out late last week that he will, in fact, not be able to wear the jersey number 23, despite having a what could be best be described as a parking lot jersey swap ceremony between him and LeBron James, where LeBron gives him the number 23. Well, Nike has put the kibosh on that because of the thousands upon thousands of jerseys that have already been made for the upcoming season featuring LeBron James's number 23. So he can't switch to the number 6 and let Anthony Davis have the number 23. That'll have to wait a year. So Davis has been introduced now wearing just the number 3. So that's one part of the news, that the whole situation with he waives his trade bonus of $4 million. They're able to sign another Supermax player. They did not. He's able to wear number 23 because LeBron gave him that number to be able to wear. That didn't happen either. Well, now Anthony Davis has announced that he is focused on this upcoming season and that he's not going to be worried about anything else. Not free agency, but also that he won't be playing in the 2019 FIBA World Cup, that he wants to focus on winning a title with the Lakers, that he's not going to play in the FIBA World Cup in 2019, and that he's still undecided on whether or not he's going to be playing for Team USA in the 2020 Olympics held in Tokyo. I find that to be interesting. Davis's camp is letting it know that his actions will continue to back up those words, where he wants to be a when he wants to be a world champion. Chris Haynes of Yahoo Sports is reporting that Davis will opt out of consideration to joining the USA basketball roster for the 2019 FIBA World Cup. He will not participate in the training camp and will remove his name from consideration. Davis, who's now only 26, wants to utilize the bulk of his offseason to prepare for a championship run with his new team. Davis's agent, Rich Paul of Clutch Sports, who everyone in the state of Louisiana and in New Orleans in particular are big fans of, confirmed his client's decision to Yahoo Sports. Davis does remain committed to competing in the Olympics as of right now, a source said, but that was not confirmed by Rich Paul of Clutch Sports. Look, Davis sitting out isn't really a huge shock. Davis has waived his $4 million trade kicker. He also apparently helped the Lakers recruit DeMarcus Cousins. I also find it interesting that his comments over the weekend, the former Pels star, the face of the franchise, mentioning that, you know, it's going to be like LeBron getting used to playing with him because it's him and Rondo and DeMarcus, and they already know how to play so well together from that playoff appearance that they had a couple of years ago with the Pels. And I get what he's trying to say there, but, boy, it just comes off disingenuous. It just comes off as, first of all, Anthony Davis is not on the same level as LeBron James. LeBron James has the hardware to back it up, including multiple world championships and league MVPs. Take that aside, he says, you know, we had something really good. The big component of that team that not only made a run towards the tail end of the 2017-18 season and then got in there and stunned the Portland Trailblazers in the first round, yes, Anthony Davis was on that team. DeMarcus Cousins was hurt. He didn't even play in those playoffs because he had ruptured his Achilles. And yes, Rajon Rondo kind of turned it on and became playoff Rondo and helped lead that team. But I like how Anthony Davis just has forgotten the fact that Drew Holiday, you know, one of the best two-way players in the league, was on that roster and helped them not only get into the playoffs but helped them win that series. I like how he has kind of selective memory there. Well, you know, we already know what it takes to do this. We know what it takes to, you know, do that. And LeBron's going to play with, I like how he just forgot about Drew Holiday and what Drew brought to the table and how much better Drew made Anthony Davis. But once again, AD can't help himself. He just can't help himself. So, but waive the $4 million bonus, the trade kicker. Doesn't get that. So they can sign a Supermax player. That doesn't happen. LeBron makes a big deal about gifting him the number 23 so he can wear 23 in the purple and gold for the Lakers. They even have a great and so well-lit photo that they posted on social media of them in a parking lot of a strip mall is the only thing I can think of where he's handing him a jersey. But now that's not happening. And now he's talking about how he's not going to compete in the World Cup, which is, that's not that big of a deal. Okay, but I don't know. Just the fact that he made the comment like he did and just, you know, forgot about Drew Holiday, and I get it. He's wanting to focus on what's going on right now. He wants to focus on what's going on with the Lakers. And Rondo and DeMarcus and him are now all part of the Lakers. But I do find it funny that the knock and that the rumors coming out of AD's camp is that the Pels couldn't build a winner around him. And that's one of the reasons why he wanted to leave New Orleans. And yet here he is in Los Angeles, and he has two former Pels players with him. And they're trying to build a championship team. That makes me smile. We'll talk New Orleans Pelicans, how they fared in the summer league, and how the young guys did for the Pels with our next guest, David M. Grubb. Will be joining us right here on RP3 and Company on Acadiana Sports Station 103.7 The Game, broadcasting live from SEC Media Days. Welcome back to RP3 and Company on Acadiana Sports Station 103.7 The Game. We are broadcasting live from SEC Media Days here at the Hyatt Regency in Hoover, Alabama. We've talked a lot about Media Days, but we also spent a good portion of today's show discussing the NBA Summer League, as we should. Pels had a good performance. Their run comes to an end, though, last night. But there's a lot of positive things to take away from the Baby Pels performance there in Las Vegas. And we're going to talk all about that with our next guest. He is a contributor to CrescentCitySports.com. He's also about to debut his new talk show down there in New Orleans next month. It'll be Hard in the Paint with David Grubb on Sports 1280 AM. Can't wait to hear about that when that gets launched here in a few weeks. Let's welcome back to the program the one and only David M. Grubb. David, how you doing this morning, brother?
I'm doing very well, you know. Storm was less than anticipated, so that's a good thing. And good basketball got to watch over the weekend, so.
Yeah, glad. Thankfully, it was far better than people expected, Tropical Storm Barry / Hurricane Barry. David, I wanted to get your thoughts. The run comes to the end for the Pels there in the Summer League, but we saw a lot of positives. I want to talk about Jackson Hayes. What impressed you the most from him, and do you think he's going to spend a lot of time on the bench this coming season, or did you see something a little bit different from him that will change your mind?
Well, the first thing I think that we saw that we didn't expect out of him was his offense. This was a kid who only took three jump shots all season at Texas last year. And in his first game, he was taking mid-range jump shots and three-pointers. So his offense may be a little bit further ahead than we thought. He still has a long way to go. David Griffin talked about it yesterday. Physically, he's got to get his core strength up. He can be pushed around in the post. He's not a great rebounder still with his body. He uses primarily his athleticism. He can be pushed around relatively easily. And I think Griffin's plan is, again, to bring him along slowly. He views him as somebody that's going to take a little while to be a regular contributor. So I think he'll probably spend most of his time alternating back and forth between the G League and the Pelicans bench. I think he'll get some, he won't get a lot of minutes early, because he's still a baby when it comes to basketball. He's played 2 years of competitive basketball, essentially. So as much as the upside is there now, it looks very intriguing for him. You still just worry about that lack of experience and the things that it's going to take time to learn. And then the physical development. He's still growing from what all reports too. So this is a kid who could be 7'2" by the time all is said and done. But physically, yeah, that's the biggest part of his game he's got to work on. But you see the skill. You see the natural ability that's there. And it's very exciting what his upside could be.
We're talking with David M. Grubb, a contributor for CrescentCitySports.com here on the ARCO Equipment Hotline. David, I want to talk about the other rookie first-round draft pick, young man out of Vatech. He had some great highs. He also had some considerable lows. I think people need to be a little bit patient with him. It's going to take some time. Your thoughts on the backup number two guard for the Pels?
Yeah, Nickeil Alexander-Walker, I think a lot of people were surprised, and I was too, in his ability to play the point guard. But you're absolutely right. It kind of got out of hand. I mean, he had a great performance, 26 points over the week, over six games, six assists, five boards. He did a little bit of everything, almost three steals a game too. So, yeah, it was interesting to see how complete a player he was. But we've got to pump the brakes a bit. This is summer league. 80 to 90% of the guys who have been playing over the last 2 weeks won't be on NBA rosters. So I don't think he's a challenge to be the starting point guard. I still view him, I mean, you look at the rotation, there are only so many minutes to go around at the guard position, and two-thirds of those minutes are going to Lonzo Ball and Drew Holiday right off the bat. And then you have J.J. Redick, you have Etuan Moore, you have Josh Hart. There are a lot of guys that are going to be in that rotation. So, again, for Nikhil Alexander Walker, it's going to be how much can he prove he can defend at the NBA level? Can he get his shot off at the NBA level? And can he run an offense without turning the ball over? He had 24 assists, but he also had 16 turnovers. So that's a big concern. You can't have a rookie point guard on the floor who's turning the ball over regularly. So again, there's a lot of good things to see out of these young players, but we can't get carried away. There's a reason that, you know, they come into the league as unfinished products. This is a kid who's left as a sophomore. To expect him to come in and lead the team, you know, from day one is just, it's not fair to him. Let's give him an opportunity to develop. Let's give him an opportunity to learn what it's like in the NBA, especially at that point guard spot, which I think is the hardest position to transition to from college to the pros.
We're talking with David M. Grubb, who will be the host of Hard in the Paint with David Grubb, all here on the ARCO Equipment Hotline. David, real quick, does Cavell Bigby Williams have a future in the NBA with the Pels?
I think he has a future in the NBA. Whether it's with the Pels, I'm not sure yet. He could be a good candidate for a two-way contract because he brings things to the table that you don't have to teach. His rebounding, his defense, you know, as far as his development in that regard, physically he's more mature than most guys. And I think that's what you are looking for in your roster early, is people who you don't have to do anything for. And Cavell's one of those guys you don't have to write any plays for him offensively. You don't have to do anything special to get him involved. He will get involved just by activity. Two double-doubles are very impressive. He finished with 8 points, 8 boards a game. I think he has a future in the NBA, but I think he's going to probably end up on a G League. If he stays with the Pelicans, he'll be on a G League contract or a two-way deal because they do have one two-way spot available still. Or he could have really impressed another team. I mean, there aren't. You know, there's always room for a big man who's willing to do a little bit of everything, and that's Cavell. I thought he was the most pro-ready of all the LSU guys coming in. Not the most skilled, but the most pro-ready. So I think there's a spot for him somewhere this year.
Wrapping things up here with David M. Grubb, contributor for CrescentCitySports.com, as well as talk show host in New Orleans. David, quickly, your thoughts, what are your biggest takeaways about what you saw from the baby Pels here over the course of the summer league?
I think the biggest takeaway is that you see the plan for this team that David Griffin wants to follow, and the players that he's drafted are exactly fitting in with that plan. He wants versatile guys who can run the floor and are mature and good teammates. And I think you take away all those things. You saw skilled players. You saw guys who were willing to be leaders. The camaraderie was great there. So I think that the summer league, this was a very productive summer league. Whether they had won games or not, the effort was there. The intelligence was there. And so I think Pelicans fans should be very encouraged that for the first time in a long time, there's going to be fights at the bottom of the roster for positions rather than just seeing guys who may not be, shouldn't be on NBA rosters. This is going to be a very competitive training camp.
David, appreciate your insight and appreciate you making some time for us, as always, my friend. Best of luck with the launch of the new show, and we'll be in touch with you soon.
Thank you so much. Always a pleasure.
David M. Grubb joining us there on the ARCO Equipment Hotline. He's a contributor for the CrescentCitySports.com. He's also the host of Hard in the Paint down there in New Orleans, which will make its debut in a few weeks in August. We got to hit our final break of today's show. Coming up, we'll be talking with a former Florida Gator. The one and only Ben Troop will be joining us, giving us some insight into this year's Gators team right here on 103.7 The Game, Acadiana Sports Station, broadcasting live from SEC Media Days in Hoover. Welcome back to RP3 and Company here on Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game. We are broadcasting live from SEC Media Days here in Hoover on Radio Row. And now we're being joined by one of the best to ever do it, a former All-American tight end at Florida. He was also an SEC champion, first-team All-SEC, and a John Mackey Award finalist. He was a second-round NFL draft pick, played in the NFL for 5 years. He is in the Florida-Georgia Hall of Fame. He's currently now co-host of Three and Out on ESPN Coastal, as well as a contributor to SouthernPigskin.com. It's our privilege to welcome to the program the one and only Ben Troop. Ben, good morning to you, brother. How are you?
Oh, man, thanks for the introduction. Some of that, I mean, I see y'all was able to go back to get that old VHS tape, man. I think I was right before DVDs, man. But it's always good to be seen, and always good to, you know, be here with you guys, man. I'm still trying to engulf this whole being a part of the media thing, but I'm loving it.
You've been here. I take it back in the day, you were here as a member of the Gators. What's it like for you going from being a player to now a member of the media? Is it still nerve wracking? What's that process for you, man?
When you a player, you know, coach give you that, you know what to say, even though you don't know what to say. being on this side of it, man, number one, the first and foremost, the respect for you guys, the respect for, you know, just how much goes into it. I mean, I don't know how many days it was when I was a player. Right now, it was four. I was telling the guys I'm on the radio with, pretty soon, man, it's going to be a 7-day event. The NFL draft used to be 2 days. Now it's 3 days. And I just think that when you look at just how big college football is, I got a lot of friends from up north. They said, man, do you guys ever turn it off? I'm like, football? I'm like, I hope not. No, that's not something we do. But I'm enjoying this side of it, man, when you look at the fact that blessed enough to be able to represent your university, now to be able to represent, you know, a network. And it's humbling, man, to be able to come in here and talk about some of these young guys today. Man, I'd be just as excited as everybody else, but I have to kind of keep it under wraps, kind of keep my fandom. I mean, Felipe Franks, I'm going to be like, I've met him before. I'm going to have to see him act like we never met, like, Felipe, you know what to do now. But I'm enjoying it, man. I mean, my life is a dream to go from being out of the limelight to kind of being back in it again. I take it wholeheartedly.
We're talking with Ben Troop here live on Radio Row at SEC Media Days, the former Florida Gator All-American, currently co-host of 3 and Out on ESPN Coastal. Ben, how impressed have you been with the job that Dan Mullen did in year one? I think he exceeded a lot of people's expectations. Did he do that for you?
He did. Dan Mullen is a guy, for those that don't remember, the very first college football playoff that came out, the very first poll that came out, I think he was ranked number one at Mississippi State at the time. And Scott Strickland, he replaced Jeremy Foley as athletic director, and it was an easy hire for him. You know, it's good to have a head coach that understands just get the most out of the players you have. Don't try to turn them into something else. I always felt as though the offense was just missing a certain piece, not certain players. And the job he did with that offense last year, the job he did with that team. I mean, because certain games that Florida was in last year, let's face it, if Florida 2 years ago, if Florida's down at home against LSU, down at home against South Carolina, they don't come back and win those games. Down on the road against Vandy, 10-3 is hard to come by in the SEC. Period. To do that in year one with these unrealistic expectations, especially when you coach in Florida, hey man, Dan's the man, man. I think he got the team in the right direction. Hopefully, he can keep that momentum going.
We're talking with Ben Troop, former Florida Gator All-American, co-host of 3 and Out on ESPN Coastal here on Radio Row at SEC Media Days. Ben, how key has it been in Felipe Franks' development as a signal caller to have someone like Dan Mullen coaching him?
I think the greatest thing Dan has done for Felipe is he's let him understand, let the game come to you. Obviously, when people hear five-star quarterback, that means he got a big arm. He can throw it 70. Well, you can also – Dan said, well, listen, we want you to throw a 10, and hopefully they can run 70. I think it's – you know, while everybody wants to see the Hail Mary against Tennessee, I'd rather see, you know, third and manageable, man. Get it down to – get it, you know, check it down or throw it away. And I think what he's shown Felipe Franks is, look, man, you don't want to be a one-trick pony. You want to be a guy that could be a great game manager. You want to be a guy that has the confidence of your teammates. And – Felipe Franks, the last half of the season, man. I mean, it was literally night and day. And I think what Dan Mullen does the best is he takes what you have and he uses that. He's not trying to make you into something that you're not. And then, obviously, in this Dan Mullen offense, you got to be a willing runner. You don't got to be a great runner of the football. And I think adding that nuance to Felipe Franks' game, man, I mean, it was incredible to see.
We're talking with Ben Troop, former Florida Gator All-American, NFL pro here at SEC Media Days on Radio Row. Ben, what does this Gators team need to do to take the next step and to go toe-to-toe and win the SEC East and take that away from Georgia and compete for an SEC championship this year?
Wow. Listen, man, Kirby Smart has done an incredible job at Georgia. They stockpiling five-star recruits now. You know what? You have to play. You have to play up to Georgia's, you know, potential. You know, for four quarters. Florida doesn't lack talent. Florida doesn't lack scheme. But nobody's going to remember it being a one-score game going into the fourth quarter. They're going to see the end result. And I think you got to be a closing team. You got to be able to say, listen, the most well-conditioned team and a team that has that knockout on the fourth quarter. Because let's face it, Georgia is a great throw away from being a national champion, not just an SEC champion.
That's right.
And I think what happens is, listen, I believe Florida as well as Kentucky benefited from a great Georgia team last year. You want to be able to say, look, Florida got shown, okay, we can play for them for three quarters. Can we play with them for four? Because I was there a couple of years ago, man, when it was 21-0 in the first quarter. I just think that Dan Mullen has to understand no one's gonna care what your record was at the end of the year if you can't deal with them boys from Athens.
We're talking with Ben Troop, former Florida Gator All-American, co-host of Three and Out on ESPN Coastal here on Radio Row at SEC Media Days. Ben, back in your day when you played the big rivals, Florida State, Miami, Georgia, obviously, and a little bit of, I guess, Tennessee, this Florida-LSU series has become heated. It's got a lot of juice, and it's become quite a rivalry for the two programs. It's even bled over into other sports. As a former Gator yourself, what do you see about this series between these two teams, LSU and Florida, that makes it such a good emerging rivalry?
It's necessary. I think we – listen, I know it's crazy. It got took to another level a couple of years ago with the hurricane situation.
Right.
And, you know, Florida's supposed to play at home, and then the AD's going back and forth talking about, oh, you guys could just come to LSU. Yeah. So you got 5,000 volunteers to just, you know, pull out the air. I think what it is – you need rivalries. You know, LSU think they DBU. Florida think they DBU. LSU don't like Florida. Florida don't like LSU. And I think what happens is too often at times in sports now, it's too many, you know, changing jerseys at the end of the game. I would never have done that. I'll do it in the offseason where ain't nobody going to see me. I don't like these guys. Listen, Ryan Clark is a good friend of mine. Every time we interview each other – some kind of way he'll go, yeah, but you still went to Florida. Well, you went to LSU. It's one of those things to where LSU brings out the best in Florida, and I think vice versa. And I think when you look at the fact that LSU's not going anywhere, that's how I cross over forever. I mean that goal line stand at LSU when you got Leonard Fournette and Geis, that's the kind of things you're going to remember because you know football is about moments. Everybody wants to win the Natty, but unfortunately Clemson and Alabama ain't going nowhere for a while. So, hey, listen, man, that consolation prize is going to be during the year. So I do think those LSU series, man, is always going to be grand. And the fact that Florida, you know, won last year and they had to go to Death Valley this year, Joe Burrow, remember? I mean, so I think it's great for football, man. I think it's great for two teams that, you know, obviously need each other at this point.
Ben, I take it you're looking forward then to October 12th in Death Valley. You're gonna be making the trip to Baton Rouge, you know, see Florida at LSU.
You know what? Listen, I my heart can't take certain things at this point. Listen, the analyst in me, I'm always gonna be, you know, objective. I understand that, but the fan in me, there's no way I can go to Death Valley, and my Florida Gators don't come out with the win because then I'm gonna pay my money to travel. I'm gonna sit in my home, watch my cable, and hope by myself. And hopefully they go out there and get the dub.
Ben, appreciate you coming on, brother, making some time for us here on Radio Row. And enjoy yourself the rest of the week, my friend.
Hey, man, appreciate you guys having me.
That's Ben Troop, former Florida All-American NFL pro, co-host of 3 and Out on ESPN Coastal, joining us. That's going to do it for today's edition of RP3 and Company, live from SEC Media Days. Make sure to tune in. Check out 1037thegame.com later today for exclusive coverage of LSU here at SEC Media Days. Y'all have a great day. We'll talk to you soon.